Good morning. Today is Tuesday, the 27th of February. Something isn't right with this picture so far. Joining us this morning is Eureka City Schools Superintendent Gary Storitz. Good morning.
Morning. How we doing?
It's February 27th.
It's February 27th.
I don't know how that happened.
Time flies when we're having fun.
Yeah, you got to work on the fun part, I guess. It's flying one way or the other. Let's see here if we can find you a question that you have half a chance at. All right, maybe not so much so.
I'll take a coin flip, all right.
Okay. I guess that's, you've only got one choice left in this category, so here we go. When, why there's no turning back, do we say that the die is cast?
Racking my brain right now, the best thing I have is some sort of pottery reference, perhaps.
Okay.
Yeah, I got a little bit of a head nod.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Well, at least you didn't say it had to do with gambling. That's good. When you say the die is cast, you're quoting Julius Caesar. In 49 BC, the Roman general stood and thought long. Wait a minute, I did this one before. It was the Rubicon. When he was crossing the Rubicon.
Okay.
Just forgot to jot it down. Ah, okay, here we go.
There we go. All right.
And this one's even appropriate.
All right, well,
why is a glaring error called a snafu?
One more time.
Why is a glaring error called a snafu?
Oh, boy, I don't know. But I think snafu may be my middle name. You know, what do we got?
Well, and this is the sanitized version. But you'll be able to figure it out if you don't already. During the Second World War, massive military operations were so huge that they usually were fouled up by sheer weight and size. The frustrated servicemen called them snafus, an acronym for situation normal, all fouled up.
That's pretty good.
Some guy that fouled up was a polite adaptation for family use, but regardless, the expression snafu lived on and now, as it did then, means a glaring error.
Glaring error.
Yes.
I like
it. Situation normal. Yeah, no kidding. Oh,
pretty good.
Boy. Have you got the revise yet or the mid-year budget?
Yeah, the Legislative Analyst's Office just came out last week and is predicting, you know, that the budget deficit that the governor laid out in the middle part of January is, you know, a little bit more bleak than
about 50% off is what I was hearing,
you know, so yeah. Looking at about another $8 billion over the course of the next couple of years, I think. So
okay,
you know,
were there any recommendations or actions associated with it, or just, hey, you know, instead of hitting the road, let's pay attention to the home front here a little bit?
Yeah,
your hole is bigger than what you thought.
The Legislative Analyst Office is this, you know, independent body that kind of, you know, looks at the budget, and they, you know, tend to shoot it a little bit straighter than the Department of Finance. And, we'll be sitting down later this afternoon and having a meeting with Paul Ziegler, our Assistant Superintendent of Ed Services, and, you know, talking about plans for the future and impacts this may have.
Paul, what does it mean, man?
You know, like looking at our multi-year projections and, you know, having to make any, you know, necessary adjustments right now. And, you know, well,
if enrollment went up, Gary, let's say 5%, mm-hmm. does that mean a 5% larger budget for the district, or would that mean 5% more cost and not necessarily associated revenue?
You know, a little bit of both. About 80% of a budget, 80-85% of any school district's budget is in personnel. So, you know, you're going to take a 5% increase, and you're going to kind of look to see, you know, if you are where you're at class size wise. Are you at the max of your class size limits, or are, you know, do you have a little bit of wiggle room? And all of that would determine how much, you know, additional revenue you have to put into programs. But 5% increase in enrollment, that would be a blessing at this point. The state is, you know, kind of looking at decreased enrollment, and, you know, the last projections that I remember seeing from Humboldt County in general have us somewhere in a double-digit decline over the next 10 years. So
continuing to age.
Continuing to not have as many babies coming into the system. So we're dealing with the opposite problem, right. By and large right now.
Of course, if we had affordable housing, or housing that was affordable for youngers, nobody's making those anymore. It seems intriguing to me that with the projections, what do you predicate them off of, though? Is it birth rate at the local hospitals? Well, that doesn't allow for influx or for those leaving the area. How do you kind of wrap your head around what you're looking at? Or class size. A little bit more experienced than you. When I was going through, 25, 26, 27, 28 kids in the classroom was normal.
For sure.
No helpers. We had the teacher, and we just kind of took care of business. That's not the case now. So how do you project some of those costs and some of those revenue fluctuations to know what may or may not happen, either by budget priorities or by union contract negotiations?
Over the course of a multi-year projection through business services and through Paul Ziegler's office, he does a really good job of anticipating our projected enrollment. And he's got this down to a science to where, our plus or minus for margin is pretty negligible, really. So this is the time of year where we're sitting down with principals and we're having conversations about impacts to class sizes and additional classrooms, perhaps at the transitional kindergarten level. So we've got more four-year-olds, coming onto campus as they're
eligible. Well, that sounds like sanity reigning.
And, trying to determine where those which campus those four-year-olds are, going to be going to, but we're getting there.
You realize how weird that sounds? Four-year-olds?
Four-year-olds.
Even five-year-olds?
Five-year-olds. That's the research supports it.
It's weird.
It's good for it's good for the kids.
Weird can be good.
Weird can be good.
Weird is just weird. Speaking of which, we'll be back. It's 8:19.
Murphy's Markets has everything you need to get through your day the healthy way. From drinks to snacks and everything in between, right now, Amy and Brian coconut water is only $1.99. Brew Dr. Kombucha drinks are also just $1.99. And Annie's homegrown products are $2.49. A 6-ounce Yoplait yogurt is only 79 cents. And don't forget about chicken of the sea tuna, 4 for $5. Get a boost for your day by stopping by Murphy's Markets. More than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Gary Storts from Eureka City Schools. Gary, are there pressures that are changing pressures from the state for education or issues around education, or around educators, that are either making it easier for you guys, or more challenging? Just, somebody has this pet project or that pet project is becoming more litigious almost, or risk avoidant rather than education driven.
I think some of the pressures or some of the change, that is taking place in schools right now are good changes that I can support. So we've got, let's make sure that kids are coming to school at a younger age so that they're more prepared. If we know that kids are coming into school at 4 and 5 years old, ready to go, we know that we can get them, reading at grade level by the end of the third grade. There are so many data points to suggest that is such an incredible mile marker.
Do a lot of parents not read to their kids or read with their kids? The Dr. Seuss books. I mean, it's not like it has to be Shakespeare or anything else of that magnitude. It could, I mean, it really could be the Berenstain Bears.
Absolutely.
Or Dr. Seuss, that kind of thing. That just isn't happening in a lot of the homes?
I think it's happening in some, perhaps not all. And I think that that is one of the pieces that we're really, you know, digging into at Eureka City Schools in our effort to make sure that all of our kids are reading a grade level by the end of the third grade. We are coming up on our mid-year assessments right now, and we're seeing a lot of really positive growth and a really positive trend in our earliest learners, making sure that they're able to reach that important benchmark. We transitioned from this, you know, whole language approach where it's, you know, it's just kind of read to your kids and, you know, by osmosis they'll learn how to read, to more of this phonics-based instruction. Sounds.
Wait,
letters have sounds.
The English and, language, and you're going to teach it by phonics.
You know, they'll figure, right? So we're back, yeah. But we're the education has begun to flip back onto the phonics train, you know, now labeled, you know, the science of reading. And we are, which is positive, and there's 40 years worth of research to support this. And we adopted a new phonics-based early literacy program at the end of last year, first year that it's fully being implemented this year. And we're seeing a lot of really positive growth right now.
So is that comprehension, or that's the bridge from seeing to being able to read and put sounds to the letters?
Yeah, the latter. So, you know, knowing that C, A, and T all have very distinct sounds, and when you blend them together, it, you know, spells the word cat. And and getting in the most simplistic of,
yeah, yeah,
of
no,
terms,
I,
there's blends and morphemes.
I'm going off into the Fs and those sounds, and it's simplistic. Yeah, no.
But we're seeing, by and large, with the earliest learners, you know, some double digit growth in terms of students that are reading at grade level or where they should be at middle of the year in comparison to the beginning of the year. So trending in a really positive direction. So now what we're able to do is we're able to, you know, go back in and kind of look for those, break the data apart and really look at those teachers that are doing an exceptional job. Well, we see in Brian's class, you know, that Brian's students have grown 20%, you know, over the course of this particular year. And, you know, so let's really go in and let's investigate, you know, what Brian is doing. Let's go and let's try and learn from what Brian is up to right now. You know, what does this class look like? How is the furniture arranged? How are the students interacting with the text? You know, what is on the walls? What?
So that couldn't be a 1 year snapshot.
This is
it's got to be a trend, you know, over multiple years.
Absolutely, okay. Absolutely. So the mid-year data really is it's data, it's point in time data, and you know, when you're looking to make data driven decisions from a school perspective, it just leads to questions, you know. So what does this tell us? So now that we see that something is working in Brian's classroom, let's go put ourselves in there and see what we can learn, you know, and be inquisitive and be lifelong learners and see if there's something that we can pick up and put our finger on or something that we want to pay attention to. Is there something that's going on in Brian's class and Susan's class and, you know, Linda's class that's all the same, and all of these folks are getting really high leverage results right now? Is there something that we should be paying more attention to and trying to, you know, expand and broad use?
So what if it's non-traditional or something that is formally frowned upon? Okay, so my one-off is to do it this way, yours is that way. We both may be very successful with it.
Or sure.
One of us maybe. Do you have the flexibility to be able to approach things maybe not linearly, but from a side door?
Yeah, I think that we want to make allowances for experience, you know, and what's working. But we also want to make sure that we have a foundation in which we can grow from. We want to make sure that, you know, folks
are not a wall to be able to hide behind. Okay, I got you.
we want to make sure that it looks consistent enough to where if we put a group of teachers into Brian's classroom to learn from what Brian is doing so well, that it doesn't look like it's some insurmountable task. Brian's class should look really familiar, you know, you know, to what is going on inside of Gary's class. Different, they're different educators, you know, there's a science to...
There's a style.
Yeah. There's a science to teaching, but there's also an art, and that art may look different.
So if I wanted to bring back Dick and Jane, and that was, my class was reading well, Could you?
We would. We'd take a look at it and see what we could learn.
You weenie. KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:30.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:34. We're back talking shop this morning with Gary Stortz from Eureka City Schools. Is there a concern that you have age waves coming through staff?
When we look at the number of our employees who are perhaps in the final third of their career, and we look at...
That sounds so fatalistic.
life really begins...
How about over 50?
Okay, so right. if we look at our staff that are perhaps over 50, and then we look at the number of candidates coming into the teaching profession, there's just simply less applicants than there used to be. And,
at the same time, there's a driving down of class size.
Correct.
So you've got kind of both working at opposites.
You got both working at opposites, and getting dedicated people into the teaching profession is something that we have to do. One of the things that we're talking about doing at Eureka City Schools is reaching out to our staff our former students that are in college right now and are maybe undeclared majors. And saying, hey, have you thought about teaching? We remember you. You want to come back and work at your former school? Are you interested? Like, let's talk about what that could look like.
That ankle bracelet has not been severed.
there might be some opportunity here for you. And, as a local kid myself, having an opportunity to go back and teach at my local school and now work.
A little weird, huh?
There's
cool. But weird.
Cool, weird, and very rewarding, all at the same time. And I think that's why we get into education and we get into the profession. We recognize that, we are, never going to be swimming in dollars. You don't get into the profession to drive a Rolls Royce. We get into the profession.
I don't think there are a lot of Rolls sales locally, period, across the board.
I wonder.
Okay, being the weird individual that I truly am, why not teaching? Rather than why teaching?
Yeah.
Why not?
That's a good spin.
And find out, talking to the kids when they're seniors.
Absolutely.
Say, why not? And let them into the teacher lounge. And have them job shadow, whatever their favorite topic is, subject matter. Let them follow and see what does that job mean?
Spot on. It's almost like you're reading my mind. So we're looking at what is...
Hello!
it's hollow. we're looking at putting in an educational pathway at Eureka City Schools to address that workplace shortage at some point in time where we would be looking to do many of the things that you just suggested. When I was an eighth grade student at at Winship.
You were saying Jacobs. you checked off on that one.
when I was an eighth grade student at Winship, one of my elective periods was to go over to Glen Paul, which is the campus right across the street, right next door, and work in a classroom there. And that was really one of my introductions to helping students. And I can remember working, with the teacher that was in there and working with the students and getting a sense of satisfaction, for help, and it was memorable.
So was it? Do you come from a family of educators?
My mom taught. Yes.
Okay. So you maybe trying to find. I was thinking if you had no educational background.
Sure.
What tempted to cross that bridge to see? Yeah. What's that like?
My mom. Was in a different profession. She went back to school late and became a teacher after, started going back to school when I was, in the third or the fourth grade, and that was the point in time that she wanted to be a teacher. So, she would come home and she would talk about what she was learning and, try to think about how it was, how the theory that she was learning about was being applied, inside of the classroom. And I can remember, those dinner table conversations and, then being able to go over to Glen Paul and to work with students and then to come back and have, conversations about her student teaching experiences. And it was a lot of fun.
Ever question the decision?
No. Great. Great profession. Very rewarding.
Never.
Really? Never. There are.
I don't find that with many folks when I ask that question. Well, yeah, there have been a couple of times when you kind of go, what in the world was I thinking? Still driven, still having the passion.
Sure.
But never is a kind of a tough word to swallow sometimes.
I feel like the profession chose me, as corny as that sounds. Okay, like nice. It found me and I've embraced it. And I really love what I'm doing. I dig coming to work. I get to work with great people. And I don't know if there's a better cause than, trying to help out the next generation of leaders and learners.
Radio.
Radio. There you go. This is a lot of fun.
It's when you look at the difference between being an administrator and being in the classroom. Different rules, different skill set, different jobs.
Yeah.
Different passion?
No, I think it's a different lens in which you kind of look through. Maybe it's a different window inside of the same house. The view might be a little bit different, but we're all kind of working
toward.
Well,
you're the guy that looks in the windows in the house.
I'm looking out the window.
Oh, out the window. Okay. Yeah, okay.
No, that's it is it's a lot of fun. I think as an administrator, when you're doing it well, and when I'm at my best, I'm still teaching and I'm still learning and I'm learning alongside of teachers. And then I get to share my experience, the view in which I'm looking through and, really trying to pave a vision, moving forward.
Teacher or coach?
I was both at different points of time.
In your current role, are you teaching? Or coach, managing, I guess, would be the non-athletic version of that word.
I think it's a little bit of both. I think that there's times in which you are introducing new concepts, to folks or looking at things a little bit different. And when you're introducing that new concept, I think it fits a little bit more on the teaching end of something, going to phonics-based reading as opposed to whole language. There's a teaching component there, but then there's also a coaching component once you build a little bit of momentum, into it. And, then it's sitting back and trying to support your team, in a common mission. But a learner at all times, I think, is probably the most important part.
I would think there's a little bit of marketing in there, too. I mean, you got to sell it initially.
You have to sell it. The why has to be really clear. Otherwise, this is a profession that can
eat you up,
can stand still at times. And I think that we're getting to a place where innovation is more of a desired idea. You know, what's next?
Necessity.
A necessity, absolutely. As students change, as the workplaces change.
Well, that's one thing, Gary, that is intriguing to me. We talk about how society has changed over the last picket time frame. It doesn't matter. And there are certain institutions that have that flexibility and have been able to change with and are just as viable today as they were yesterday and will be tomorrow, and others that seem to be almost recalcitrant, you know, not neutral, but almost against.
Sure.
Stoic, I mean, whatever phraseology you want to go with. And unfortunately, the educational system seems to hit that model more than the change embracer, even though you see it in the classrooms, you see it in the kids, you see it in the individual teachers, you just don't see it structurally. Do we not know what we're looking at, or does it tend to be a reflection more of what is?
The current model of school and public schools, by and large, hasn't changed a whole lot. You know, in a long time, we still got this time-based model, you know, this kind of factory line assembly. You're going to be in the third grade, and these are the skills that you're going to learn in the third grade because you are 8 turning 9 years old. And, you know, and then next year, you are going to be in the fourth grade, and we're going to teach you these skills, and you're expected to learn these skills because you are 9 to 10 years old. Well, kids are different, and they come into the classroom with different experiences and different passions and different background knowledge. And
why would we think technology is, as cool as it is, has expanded the edges of, I guess, the spectrum of experience?
Sure.
So you have that 9-year-old kid. Well, you have the 9-year-old kid that's been ignored or comes from a drug house. I suppose those were in existence 50 years ago too, but not quite so prevalent, I guess. And then you got the techno groovy kid that's on the other end that probably has more experiences akin to a early teenager than someone who's their chronological age.
Sure. We have to learn how to embrace technology and learn to see it as a tool and not just a device in which to entertain ourselves, you know. But there's that blend where education has got to be entertaining, you know, to students as well, or engaging is the word that we like to use. So,
well, and that whole structure around, you know, the cyberbullying concept.
Sure.
And before, we couldn't guess what that meant. And now it's a reality check for a lot of the fun that you have every day.
It is
somehow connected into that world.
It's a real thing that we've got to, you know, help our students learn how to navigate, for sure.
No email. KI, okay, that precedes the program this morning. We were talking about email. It's 8:46.
Hearty and healthy foods are abundant at Murphy's Markets. USDA Choice Boneless Beef Chuck Roast is now $5.99 a pound. USDA Choice New York Strip Steak, $15.99 a pound. And USDA Grade A Boneless Skinless Chicken Thighs are only $3.99 a pound. Complement this with a Greek salad, now just $7.99 a pound, topped with Kraft salad dressing for only $3.75 for a 16-ounce bottle. Murphy's Markets, more than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning, KINS. News and information time. It's 8:50. We're back talking shop this morning with Gary Stortz from Eureka City Schools. Is there enough emphasis in the budget crunch? I know you got your negotiation cycle coming up. On training, or the recognition for training? Not the Friday afternoons, wink, wink, nod, nod, let's train over a hamburger that's barbecuing.
Sure.
But getting out of Dodge, going to conventions, seeing other peers. You take somebody and you run off to Wyoming. Why? Because they're doing something that's cool. We just don't know what it is. And visit for a week and come back and, you know, whatever. Is there that kind of flexibility built into the system right now?
Yes and no. You know, so what we have to do is come up with our identity. And we've done a good job of coming up with our identity. I think we had this robust process last year where we identified the competencies that we want in our future graduates. We got, you know, 5,500 pieces of feedback, and we put that into a profile of what we want Eureka graduates to be. Now it's about taking that poster that we have and putting it into practice inside of the classroom. And In the middle of this month, I'll have an opportunity to get together with some of the early adopters, the folks that really want to put their time and effort into this. And we'll be talking about our next steps. And for that identified area, we've got to be, you know, get out of the Redwood Curtain and see what's happening across the nation, because there is great work that is happening and kind of flipping the educational model on its head. And that's what we'll be looking
for. And getting support from Marshall, too.
Yeah.
So that they don't feel like they're the lone warrior, because you know they're going to get beat up.
Sure.
It always happens. You know, sure. How come? Why not? Undercut. This, you know, this is your idea, not my idea, not our idea. Cut. To keep that enthusiasm. Is that something that's taken into account also?
The beauty, I think, of the Portrait of a Graduate is that it's pretty open-ended. You know, all that we've really done is we have we've identified the cover of the book. Now we're going to be able to talk with our educators, and now we're going to be able to talk to our educators and help them write the chapters. There's no one way in which to bring the community's vision of what a graduate should happen alive.
Well, that's the beauty of it.
You know,
it's not a stamp out. It is something that's individual to that teacher, individual to that school district.
Now let's go learn together and then make it happen. And I think that come the middle of the month, we'll be talking with those early adopters and, you know, putting a plan in place. It's exciting. It's new. And I think that there's a sense of urgency to get it right, because our kids deserve it.
Revolutions are exciting and new. Yeah. So, yeah, hopefully you'll have critical mass behind you and you'll be able to start to make some of that cool stuff happen. Thanks for coming by.
Thank you, sir.
February 27th. See everybody tomorrow.